Straight from the WCHL studios in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 97.9 The Hill presents the Sibling Rivalry Sports Show with your host, Chris and C.L. Brown. Tonight, in the inaugural episode, the brothers talk ACC football, Roy Williams court naming, and welcome ESPN's Josina Anderson to talk NFL football. And now, your ticket to the backyard brawl, the Sibling Rivalry Sports Show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. We've been waiting for this moment, and it's finally here. Boy, we've been looking forward to meeting you all. This is Sibling Rivalry Sports, coming to you from the Hill, 97.9 WCHL. My name is Chris Brown, along with C.L. Brown. I want to say the C.L. Brown. We're here to bring you a unique tandem look at sports, not always in agreement, but always from two perspectives, trying to make the best sense out of all of this. CL, how are you doing?
Man, this has been a long time coming. I look back and think back to when we were in the backyard playing one-on-one football, when we were inside during the winter playing knee football, when we were playing tutor football with a electric men that yes. went in circles. But now we're inviting everybody in. So yes. this is going to be fun. This will prove me right once and for all for most of the debates and discussions that we've had throughout the years.
Unfortunately, you're going to be sorely, sorely disappointed if that is your goal with this whole thing, this entire thing. But I do say Tudor football. Okay, let's get some kind of a credit for that. I want some kind of, you know, you guys get us a call because we can give them a serious credit. We played a lot of Tudor football. I forgot about knee football, though. That was something else. That was fun.
That was brilliant.
It was great.
Skin up your knees.
Yeah, well, you know, it was fun while it lasted. Well, let's just tell a tiny bit about the path here, how we made it to this show. Do you want to start? You want me to start?
You start it.
I will start it. Well, folks, you know, so Sibling Rivalry Sports. So, of course, we are brothers. We're two of five siblings, and we all came through Chapel Hill, the great university, and we love it so much. But, you know, we're also spread out. We've been at different places all across the country, and for CL and I to be living in the same state, that is quite a blessing and something that we didn't maybe never saw coming to pass. I mean, I've been out on the...
Hasn't happened since college, has it?
No, it hasn't. Yeah.
Crazy.
I've been out on the West Coast. CL has been up and over and, you know, just different places in the country doing his thing, being a daggone rock star. But anyway, so the way I came to this is I started off in television and that type of thing, got a call to kids ministry and moved out west doing that. But I got inspired by a dude named C.L. Brown who was just doing it big. He was super consistent, you know, with doing sports reporting. We've always loved sports reporting. And our models back in the day were the Bryant brothers. The Gumbel brothers, Greg Gumbel and Bryant Gumbel. NFL Live, NFL, those years that NBC had the NFL shows and they just put the abbreviation for the year after the show. We remember watching those and pretending we were those guys. And, you know, sports was always fun. I stepped away from it. I went in a different direction. But when I saw, you know, just how much fun he was having and how inspired he was, it inspired me. So a friend of mine and I created something called the Thunder Sports Network. That's my good friend Rich Hallstrom, who lives out in Seattle with his lovely wife Sheila. And you know, Rich and I started to, that's a kind of a faith-based venture. We started to do things with Thunder Sports, including cover the Super Bowl. And we wound up writing a book years later about all the things, all of our adventures. By the way, C.L. Brown penned the intro to that book, the foreword there, and that was awesome. But yeah, we wrote a book, came out earlier this year, and you know, in the course of relating with the university about the book, and they brought CL and I together, we decided, hey, that was fun doing the podcast. We did a podcast, Start Here / Never Stop, with the Media Journalism School at the University of North Carolina. Went extremely well, and we decided to come back and try a radio type venture again. And the good folks at WCHL agreed. So here we are. That's how I got here.
Here we are. My path was a different, a little bit more straightforward in terms of graduating and going straight into newspapers. I worked in Rocky Mount, North Carolina. It's the first job I had in newspapers. Cut my teeth there and moved up. Probably the biggest move for me personally was when I got hired from the Charlotte Observer to work for the Louisville Courier-Journal. Was in Louisville for 13 years. Changed a whole lot. Started drinking bourbon, living in Kentucky. got into horse racing because the Kentucky Derby obviously is so big there. Knew nothing about horses. Still wouldn't say that I know a whole lot about it, but I probably know more than you.
Hey, I've raced a horse before and won. I'll tell you about that one day.
But had a great time there. Went from Louisville to ESPN.com for 4 years, and now I'm with The Athletic, writing under the Field House umbrella, which is college basketball specific. And it's exciting times at The Athletic. We're doing a lot of expanding. We just expanded and created a Carolina bureau, The Athletic Carolina. So we're looking to do big things. Both in written word and on this show now. So let's get it.
Yeah, let's get after it. TheAthletic.com, lots of talented writers. CL leading the way, in my opinion. All right, so here we go. Let's just get on to some topics. Right now, what is super relevant sports-wise is the advent of football.
It's time for football on The Rivalry.
Awesome, awesome introduction. I love that music.
Yeah, remember back in the day, we you coined the phrase, but we used to call it footballaneous.
Yeah.
It's like football and spontaneous.
Can you define, but what was footballaneous? Can you define?
I wrote a column on that in Rocky Mount.
That. Yep.
It's just kind of the enthusiasm that you'll see on Twitter and social media right now that people feel having gone through a summer, kind of the summer doldrums and the dog days, and now people are getting excited again about Saturdays and Sundays and Friday nights, you know, just being out watching football being played. So that's not quite a definition, but it's somewhere in there, footballaneous.
That is a good enough definition for where we are right now. And so let's start by talking about the University of North Carolina Tar Heels, who are going up against the Cal Bears. They're venturing out to California for this game in the second half of a home-and-home from last season. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts just right at the top of how that could go, or what do you think?
I think it's going to be a tough opener. Cal is returning 10 starters on offense, including the star running back from last year, Patrick Laird, who rushed for around 1,200 yards.
Yeah.
They probably aren't as good defensively, maybe, but they do have Cameron Good, a outstanding outside linebacker, mm-hmm. that can cause trouble on that side of the ball. So, and plus, just starting the season on the road, we're not even getting into the players that have been suspended for Carolina yet. I mean, just playing a Power Five conference opponent on the road, a true road game, not a neutral site game. It's going to be a hurdle for this team, which I think is still very much a youngish Carolina team.
Let me say this. Last year, they rushed for 219 yards on this Cal team. They mirror each other in a lot of ways. It's really interesting. Cal, defensively last year, their rush defense was 61st in the nation. Even though Carolina rushed for 200 plus yards on them, their rush defense was 61st, but their pass defense was 112. All right, well, look, we have to cut to to talk about some of the people that bring us on the air for a few seconds here, but I want to tell you that Sibling Rivalry Sports has an incredible guest coming up, Josina Anderson from ESPN's NFL Live. She's here with us. That Tar Heel is going to be on the air at Sibling Rivalry Sports, which comes to you on 97.9 The Hill. Yes, yes, yes. Welcome back to Sibling Rivalry Sports on 97.9 The Hill. And we're just going to chill on the hill and continue our conversation about football. We were talking, C.L. Brown, Chris Brown here speaking. We were talking about UNC versus Cal that's coming up on Saturday and just kind of comparing some notes. I'm going to say something that, I don't know, might kind of blow your mind, CL. I think the defense for the University of North Carolina will be improved. I like Papuchis.
That's not going to blow my mind. They should be improved.
I like Papuchis. No. When I say improved, I mean making a real difference. I mean, make it, yeah, there's the nod. There's the head nod. Make it a real difference because I like where they are coming from. I like the defensive coordinator, John Papuchis. I like where he's come from and his tutelage and what he brought last year. He actually improved the team in a number of areas, you know, through his leadership. The team improved in a number of areas despite all of the injuries and that type of thing. I think they have an opportunity to do it again. With Cal, they are going to have to deal with Russ Bowers, who had a day last year, and they're going to come looking for him to have a day. They didn't even have 100 yards rushing versus Carolina, a single player last year. They threw the ball. That game went to the fourth quarter. If you recall, Carolina was actually leading most of that game and going into the fourth quarter. Gave up two touchdowns, scored a meaningless one late in the game, and Carolina lost. That was a close to being a toss-up, and I think that Carolina could go and shock some people. I think it's there for the taking. That's what I'll say.
I'm not even sure, though, that last year's numbers are even relevant to anything that's going to happen on the field come Saturday. Because you're talking about two teams going into last year's game with two totally different outlooks. I mean, this one will be different. And I think this one will be different for Carolina because of the suspensions specifically. You look at Chaz Surratt at quarterback, who was – it was an open competition. I mean, Larry Fedora did not want to name a starter, you know, throughout camp. He wanted his guys to fight, you know, to keep competing during camp. And Chaz Surratt kind of took that decision-making out of his hands, so the ball will be placed – in Nathan Elliott's hand. And we saw him last year become a capable quarterback. He was essentially the third stringer to start the year. And you know, through injuries and just through attrition, he got his opportunity. And what he did with that opportunity was make himself into to bring himself into a conversation where this, you know, in the offseason, he's battling for the starting job. So, but I probably don't have as much faith in Nathan Elliott as a quarterback than you do. Mm-hmm. I think, like I said, I think he's capable. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that he wins a game for Carolina, but he certainly can manage a game.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, 10 touchdowns last year. Nathan Elliott might not bring the mobility that Surratt brings, but Nathan Elliott is a winner. He's got a pedigree of a winner, and he can throw the ball. I like the way his progressions go when he's going back and he's reading the defense. I don't know. I just kind of like what it's looking like going out there, especially because they came across the country and put an L on this Tar Heel team last year. I think they have every motivation to go out there and do it. And let's hope that Cal tries to do it running the ball. We know they're not going to, but what if they got an idea because of Carolina's low rank last year in defending the run? If they got an idea and came out wanting to run, that I think that could very well play into the Tar Heels' hands. So I guess what I'm doing, CL, is I'm going to say Carolina wins it. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb and say I believe Carolina will shock the world on Saturday.
Do you know, is the spread 7? Cal
it
is favored by 7?
Yeah.
I think Cal wins, but Carolina covers the spread.
Okay. All right, for all you little kids out there that are betting, CL just took care of you.
Entertainment purposes only.
Yes.
Although that's soon changing too. So.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's another conversation, I guess. More on the ACC. What are okay? So just in general, What are you thinking about the ACC in football? Who are the favorites? What do you think? What's it looking like?
Well, I think it's Clemson's world once again, mm-hmm. and everyone else is just living in it. True. Until proven otherwise. I think Miami might have a shot to knock them off. I have a sleeper in the ACC.
Really?
Yes. That people might shrug and just, you know, discount off top, but I think Wake Forest has enough experience. They have a team back. They have 14 starters back. Mm-hmm. You know, they're coming off of back-to-back bowl games. Wake Forest has never, I think the stat was Wake Forest has never won three straight bowl games. They're coming off of two bowl wins, beat Texas A&M last year in a crazy belt bowl game. And so they're a confident team. They feel like they're building it the right way. The only thing, and this ain't something small. This is something to really look at. But they, like Carolina, have a quarterback suspended. Kendall Hinton will be out the first three games for violating some unspecified team rules. So obviously, off top, that's a blow. That's a punch to the gut. But mm-hmm. I think this team can be sneaky good and compete in the ACC.
Yeah, well, I will accept that. I'll accept that. Do I believe it? Not even a little. But I'll accept that it's a sleeper type of a deal. Now, Clemson, let me tell you, it's interesting that you felt like Miami could sneak in there somehow. I love the experience that Miami got last year. You know, they had some great highs. They had a couple rough knocks. You know, I like what Mark Richt is bringing down there. The culture is coming back. Do you like the chain thing that they do?
I loved it, but I just wonder how much momentum they can keep with it. In terms of, Is it going to be stale? Will it have the same effect on the kids as it did that first year?
Oh, you know, okay.
Will they have to come up with something fresh and new and different? Especially, too, since a lot of schools around the nation started to kind of copy that.
True that. All kinds of stuff. That's true. But you know what? I think at least now it still continues to be exciting. And if they have to come up with something, you know those boys at the U will come up with something. My problem with the U is a guy that I really was rooting for last year, but I cannot get behind him, and it's quarterback Malik Rozier. I feel like
quite a position to not be behind and confident in.
Yes, sir. He is a leader, you know, just a likable athlete, you know. But I just felt like there are times where he wasn't showing the maturity in that position that he needed to. And I'm not there yet with him, you know. I hope he proves me wrong just for the sake of goodwill towards him. But that's kind of why I would say that Clemson is a big-time favorite. I mean, Kelly Bryant, that guy, it was almost seamless. It was almost seamless the way he took over after Deshaun Watson. He
made it look very easy.
I know. The guy, he's really good. He's fun to watch, I will say. And then they have all kinds of defensive talent that's ridiculous. Their front seven is it's illegally ridiculous. You know, I'm not making accusations. I'm just saying they're so good. You know, Trey Lamar, Kendall Joseph at linebacker, Dex Lawrence, Christian Wilkins at defensive line. These guys are looking to be standouts again, maybe get some awards going. They are incredible players. Listeners, don't think that I am a Clemson fan. I'm not even a little bit. You know, when I was a student, I went to Death Valley and sat in there while they pummeled us. But it wasn't that bad. But anyway, not a fan, but I will say they're good. And I do like them representing the ACC. I like what they bring to the table. I like the experience of having lost. That's good. You got to lose big before you win big. I like that. So that's who I'm looking at in the ACC. And that will bring us to a close of our football segment here on Sibling Rivalry Sports on 97.9 The Hill. We're having fun with it, and we're doing it big. Next, a guest. We are bringing Josina Anderson from ESPN. You gotta stay tuned.
And joining us now is Josina Anderson, NFL reporter for ESPN. And many of you know that she is also a Tar Heel, ran track here in the 90s. What years were you here, Josina?
Oh, you're not really starting off the bat. I ran there a few years ago.
A few years.
A good time on the campus of Chapel Hill.
No doubt, no doubt. Just a few years ago. Well, I feel like this is going to be an interesting NFL season, just because of the new emphasis on trying to clean up tackling. And I wanted to get your input on that. So far, how are the players kind of reacting to it? I know in the preseason there have been a couple of times where we've seen officials make calls and it's kind of got a reaction out of guys. How do you feel like the general sense is that the players are taking to this change?
Well, it's been a period of adjustment. And certainly, you know, when defensive players have been asked to change their form or their technique on something that they've been doing as a matter of routine or habit for a while, it is going to be something that is, you know, they need to adapt to. Certainly, this is the way that they make their living, right, is by stopping offensive production. And they want to be able to do it to the best of their ability. And in some instances, there have been players who've been pretty vocal about feeling like this is something that's going to impede them from a standpoint of not being as quick to react because they're having to change what they've been accustomed to doing, let alone if it's going to put them in a position of actually hurting themselves if you are having to kind of go away from a posture that might be protective. In order to, you know, keep your head up and not crouch down and kind of, you know, cover your body up. And some people are pointing to the injury with Marquise Lee in the Jaguars game against the Falcons as a potential example of that. But the root of it comes from the NFL having done research on finding that there are higher instances of injury when a player is flexing at the neck and then creating contact by comparison to when that trajectory is not in the body. So that's where it's coming from. And members of the NFL were recently at ESPN presenting us their research to have us to understand even better. And so that's where that comes from. So the bottom line is that the objective is well-hearted. But I guess, you know, the overall thought process remains for the NFL to have to also be careful that they're not changing characteristics inherent to what is naturally a violent game in and of itself, or and by violent, I mean physical.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like our defensive guys, will this in any way, do you think, give offensive guys an advantage? Will we see some big plays early on in the year because guys are trying to make the right tackle and they may be thinking too much, or, you know, they come off and it ends up like the Saints safety last year against the Vikings in the playoffs?
Anything that could potentially delay a defensive decision, sure, could end up being an advantage to the offense. Does it mean that they're inhibited from tackling or making a play? Certainly you can make a tackle with your shoulder, and you can do so by keeping your chest up when the angle is appropriate or the play is appropriate or the location on the field is appropriate for you to do so. But I'm sure there'll be higher instances, to what degree, obviously we don't know, of you know, plays being a half a second or a smidge, you know, slower by them thinking going into that action.
No doubt. Well, kind of keeping it on defensive guys, there's a safety out there that is unsigned right now, could definitely help any team out there that's struggling in the secondary, and his name is Eric Reed. There's also a quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, still sitting out there, still unsigned. What do you feel like the atmosphere, the environment has to be? What's going to have to change for a team to reach out to those guys and sign those guys? Or I mean, are we basically in a place where their careers are a wrap now?
Well, both of those players that you name are both talented and worthy of being in the National Football League, Colin Kaepernick at quarterback and Eric Reed at safety. Both of those players also currently have a collusion case that is ongoing against the league and makes the, you know, factors for their reintegration into the league a little bit more complicated. Doesn't mean that it's right. Doesn't mean that it should be the case. But nonetheless, it is a fact. And even though there have been some meetings that Eric Reed has had, they haven't materialized in either the visit fully happening or him being signed so far. If a dire situation comes up and the stars line up and it's with a team that is less conservative, perhaps that could happen. But as of right now, if you ask me if I see it at this moment, I would say no.
Yeah. Well, during the NBA season, especially, I feel like we've seen a number of guys in the NFL kind of look with awe at some of the NBA contracts that have been signed, of some of the guaranteed money that some guys have gotten. The NFL Players Association, do you feel like that they're going to try and make a move, you know, in the future, the next collective bargaining agreement that comes up? Do you feel like there's a movement, so to speak, to try and challenge for more negotiating power, or try and bring more negotiating power to the table so that they can tilt the scales, kind of like the NBA and the Major League Baseball Players Association do, to give them more power?
Absolutely. Of course, they're going to do that, but it's also a far ways off right now. We're currently in 2018. The collective bargaining agreement doesn't end through 2020. There are a number of issues that you've been hearing that have, emanated since, free agency periods have, gone by during this duration of this current term of the CBA, particularly last, off season or so, and Steph Curry and a lot of these players were signing $200 million contracts or in excess of that are fully guaranteed. There are a lot of issues to be, talked about with relation to what portion of the pot that players are taking home, what portion is, fully guaranteed at signing, and if the portion is appropriate in each of those categories, let alone other labor issues as well. So certainly I anticipate that, but I do think that that's it's a while off. I would not say it's at the forefront, but nonetheless, members of the executive committee and NFLPA, including their executive director, obviously making moves to prepare for that in advance of the expiration of the CBA.
Yeah. Getting on the field, who's the team to beat, do you feel like, right now? I mean, will we see possibly a Philadelphia repeat? Pittsburgh Steelers, will they make the move that many, including myself as a big fan, full disclosure, that I've been waiting to see since their last appearance? Obviously, New England will be up there again. And how do you feel like the landscape is right now for the top teams?
Obviously injuries are always a big factor in the NFL, so anything can change a given week to a team's ability, to move forward in the season and the postseason. If you were to pin me down right now, I would say a team to really, look at are the Vikings. I think they're strong up and down. Their defense finished number one in points and yards allowed last year. They haven't really lost anybody in where they did along the defensive line. They made up with it for the acquisition of Sheldon Richardson, let alone doing what they feel upgrading at the quarterback position. And Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are, just another a year together in that offense as a receiving duo. So that would be one team that I think is very, very well balanced to be able to do very well again, let alone they have Dalvin Cook healthy this year, and they didn't have him, playing after he got hurt last year. So I think all of those things right now would have them as my early favorite.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard too many people say that seems like you're going out. Well, not out that far on a limb, but I like it. I like it, Josina, taking a team that a lot of people might not have said off the top of their head. I did want to ask you, too, about the Carolina Panthers this year. We saw Cam step to Kelvin Benjamin before the preseason game against Buffalo. They've been a team certainly with transitioning with Jerry Richardson out as the owner now. What do you feel like is maybe the biggest thing to look out for the Panthers this year as they, basically start a new era in their franchise history?
I would say that they have a new offensive coordinator. Be interested to see, what North Turner's influence on the offense is. I like the acquisition of DJ Moore when I was down there recently. The head coach spoke highly of your second round pick, cornerback Dante Jackson, and liking him a lot too. Josh Norman and the impact he was able to have physically and with his personality on the defense. And obviously when you guys get TD back and participating once he serves his suspension, I think, you guys have the ability, or excuse me, rather, the Carolina Panthers and, you know, corralling everything to, come together. So we'll definitely see. But Panthers always a threat in the NFC South. That division is similar to the NFC East, and it being, you know, very self-cannibalizing as well. So, when the final seedings shake out with the NFL still seeding teams at the way that they do, we'll see if, they basically don't hurt each other.
Well, Josina, we really appreciate you being on our inaugural show here on 97.9 The Hill in Chapel Hill. We wish you much success during the NFL season, and definitely come by and say hey the next time you're in the Triangle.
Oh, yeah, no problem. And you guys have a good rest of your show.
All right, take care.
Boom, boom, boom. Drop the bass. Come on back inside to Sibling Rivalry Sports here on The Hill 97.9. I'm Chris Brown. I'm here with CL Brown, and we are talking big-time sports with you.
It's time for basketball on The Rivalry.
All right. Well, what have you, CL? What are we talking about?
You know, I just thought about this is an aside from basketball, but we should see if Dallas Sports is still out there. We should have a sponsorship. Because one thing that we didn't bring up early on was the time where, and folks of a certain age will appreciate this, when back before you had DirecTV, you had basically every NFL game at your disposal on Sundays and could readily get scoring updates on a phone or whatever, laptop, tablet. We didn't have all of that. So if we wanted to watch games, if we wanted to see updated scores, get up to the minute scores on games that weren't being televised, and Chris grew up a Seattle Seahawks fan, so we never saw those guys on TV growing up in Winston-Salem.
No way.
So we would dial up, and I still remember the jingle, 900-976-1313.
Dial it. We're talking to you. In stereo.
50 cents a call, which, mid-80s, especially two kids that didn't have any income, our mother didn't appreciate that too much.
We ran up a bill.
Wasn't it like $26,
yes,
I feel like?
Yeah, it seemed like so much more, though.
Yeah.
I guess tacked on to one phone bill, if you're used to just doing an average amount, that's something.
And $13.50 a piece, that was a lot.
That is a lot.
Although you probably called it more than me, so it shouldn't even been $13.50 for me. But anyway, so...
Wait, hold on now. I only did that because you told me you wanted to know the scores, man. Don't be trying to listen now. Our mother's listening.
The Steelers came on TV. Let me put it to you that way.
Well, okay, go ahead. Basketball. Man, how far away are we from basketball?
Hoops,
basketball.
Hoops. So, Roy Williams... Mm-hmm. Had his name forever immortalized on the court in the Deaning Smith Center this past weekend, yes, in a private dedication. Former players, current team members, all totaled about 300, according to the Sports Information Department, came back to celebrate Roy Williams and the court being named now Roy Williams Court. And it got me to thinking, first of all, obviously, what he's done here has been tremendous, winning three national titles since his first season back in 2003-04 season. And it got me to thinking about the student and the mentor. Obviously, Dean Smith built the Carolina program into what we know it as today.
Yes.
Revered coach. Revered mentor by many former players, former coaches, assistants, people in the basketball office, people that have nothing to do with basketball. But I feel like Roy Williams doesn't, there's not that same amount of reverence for Roy Williams. I don't even think there's the same amount of appreciation for what he's done with the program over the years. What do you think about that? I mean, why isn't Roy Williams loved more or at least appreciated in the way that any other coach you think about that has three national titles since 2004, you know, I mean, I would think I think there'd be bronze statues being made for a lot of guys around the country.
Right. You know what? I'll tell a quick story, kind of to tell what I think about that. I remember being a student, you know, in the Smith Center, and there was, you know, in the Carolina Fever section, the Rowdy Student section, that type of thing, and the other team got a favorable call to them, and somebody in the crowd started to chant a profanity, and so other people picked it up, the profanity or what have you. Of course, I don't do that, but I was watching, you know, the bench. Dean Smith gets up from the bench, walks over towards the student section, and waves both of his hands like saying, no, stop. He was waving his hands side to side like, no, don't do that. And boom, of course, I mean, it went quiet. They stopped doing it. To me, that kind of character, which played out in the man's life off the court, that is why he is loved. Now that is not a commentary on Coach Roy. I'm just saying Dean Smith was just so three-dimensional with his character as a man, not to mention the times. That would be my guess.
I think that has a lot to do with it, and certainly Dean Smith was involved in helping to desegregate neighborhoods in Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he brought Charles Scott here as the first African-American basketball player, men's basketball player, and I think that has a lot to do with it. I also think that it just seems to be people seem to question Roy's moves all the time. It's strange. Given the amount of success he has, it just seems like they always want more, or they at least want it done a certain way. Mm-hmm. Like you can really just look at whenever he doesn't call the timeout in a game and see how many people get up in arms over Roy Williams not calling a timeout.
CL, you don't get up in arms over that? Are you saying that you don't?
No, why would I? I'm not
playing. When I say up in arms, okay, but I mean, does that not irritate you a little bit?
No, it's established now. It's well established. It is well documented that this is how he operates. He believes in what he does in practice. He believes his players will know how they're supposed to execute from that moment on, and that it's kind of like being almost like an NBA type coach, NBA type approach to it. Like, you guys are men, figure it out. Like, let's go. We know what we're supposed to do. It's that kind of a mentality. So it's what I expect. It's not, you know, it's just what you should expect at this point. It's certainly not anything to get up in arms about, because you know it's going to happen.
Great thoughts, great conversation. That's a longer conversation too, no doubt. But unfortunately, we are finite in the amount of time that we have, so we've really come to the end of our initial hour. CL, how do you feel?
The hour goes by fast, man. We have a lot of things, a lot more things we could have covered that we simply just didn't have time to. But I'm excited. This is the first one under our belt. I think we'll get better as we go forward.
Yes.
And, you know, have great guests. We're trying to line up for you guys every week. And certainly, we didn't really get into it like we can get into it. So I think you'll be entertained in the future by our opposing views sometimes of athletes, of teams, of games.
Yes. Of teams. So of teams. So let's just mention the one loyalty that you'll hear from CL Brown is that he likes the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's a lifelong loyalty. and I like the Baltimore Ravens. I know he mentioned the Seahawks earlier. Yeah, because they haven't been around for my whole entire life. They came around in 96, okay? But
one of us sticks with a team forever. Yeah. One of us switches. That's all. The Seahawks haven't gone anywhere.
I know, but
doesn't
I did.
Matter.
But
Baltimore
I did.
Has been
but
around.
I did. And I'm
no,
not,
you didn't. I'm not back going to where you started.
I'm not going back to Seattle. I'm not going to be trying to, you know, I, having come back and met my wife and settling down. I'm not moving back.
And
I'm not going.
We're in Baltimore when we start.
I'm not going to ask. I'm not going to ask to get out there and go see the Seahawks. You know, there's a longer story behind that. But anyway, bottom line, see, now there's some of the rivalry right there, folks. You can see that. You can see guests or hear guests, hear the rivalry, hear lots of sports topics right here at Sibling Rivalry Sports. Tune in each Thursday, 7 p.m. You can get it online and on demand at chapelboro.com, the WCHL website. This is Chris Brown along with CL Brown, Sibling Rivalry Sports, 97.9 The Hill.